Hi, everybody. Before we begin, I'd like to officially invite you to an exciting event that you've been hearing about for quite a long time, and the details have finally arrived. On April 6th, 2025, you are invited to a casual meet and greet with your podcast hosts, an in-person gathering for our listeners and society members at the first ever museum exhibit devoted to the classic Gen X album, Free to Be You and Me. And together we will attend the Free to Be You and Me sing-along, I just want to emphasize that, sing-along in the museum's theater, an event they've already held twice and it has sold out every time. Our generation knows how important this album was and they show up. The event is curated and hosted by the Eric Carle Museum of Picture Book Art in Amherst, Massachusetts. So if you've ever dreamed about a weekend in New England, this is your big chance. This is the Berkshires, that dreamy, bucolic, romantic getaway that you learned about by watching Cheers. If you'd like to join us in the Berkshires, here's what you can expect. A morning meet and greet with us, your PCPS podcast hosts, and a whole bunch of friends you haven't met yet. Some games and prizes, Free to Be You and Me trivia and bingo. If you want to study, just listen to our episode on Free to Be You and Me. You'll be the first readers to get a sneak peek at my new book, the sequel to Worldwide Crush, with book swag and advanced reader copies to win. We'll get a private guided tour of the Free to Be You and Me exhibit. And the ultimate pinnacle of the event, the Free to Be You and Me sing-along. So what do you need to do if you want to join us? Two steps. Step one. Buy your tickets for the sing-along at the museum website at carlemuseum.org. That's Carl with an E, museum.org. Step two, reserve your spot on the PCPS guest list by sending us an email or a DM. Then we'll send you an official invite so you can RSVP. You'll find all of this information in our weekly newsletter with links and also in our show notes. And keep your eye on our social media for the museum's Free to Be You and Me merch. I'm wearing my Free to Be You and Me t-shirt right now. If you're not able to join us on April 6th, we'll miss you. But the exhibit is ongoing. You can go right now if you want to. And it closes on April 6th. It's a beautiful spot, a beautiful museum, full of all the books you remember from when you were a child, plus this once-in-a-lifetime exhibit devoted to our generation's favorite album. If you have any questions, do not hesitate to reach out and ask. Thanks so much. We can't wait to see you, and please enjoy the show. Wow! Clapping, clapping, clapping. And then, I don't agree with this part. She says, but if I were ready, it'd be with you. And I'm like, you don't have to. You can get somebody better. You can get somebody better.
Yeah.
And he smiles all goofy, as if that's enough to make up for that throbbing he supposedly had in his pants all day. And then they disco dance.
Hello world, it's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the Big Wheel generation who spent half of their birthdays at Shakey's and the other half at Farrell's.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we're continuing our very special discussion about very special episodes by diving into the very special episodes that were very special to us.
I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
Welcome to part two of our discussion of the very special episode. Just like last week, we're talking about heavy topics that were addressed on lightweight shows, sitcoms and family shows that usually aimed only to crack us up, but now wanted us to learn. So last week, we gave you an overview of this phenomenon that thrived on 70s and 80s TV. And this week, we're each taking a deep dive into one very special episode that made an impression on us. If you recall last time, we talked about the very special episode King, which was
Different Strokes.
Thank you. I was like, what is the Mr. Drummond show? Different Strokes was the king of the very special episode, followed very closely by The Facts of Life. Naturally, that was a spinoff of Different Strokes. But you saw these on virtually every show.
One thing we talked about, or we mentioned, but we didn't go into because we have several episodes, is Little House on the Prairie was also, I think every other episode was a very special episode. It just wasn't really marketed that way, right? Because a lot of these other sitcoms would say next Tuesday on Facts of Life or whatever.
It was such a departure.
Yes. But my goodness, very special things were happening to those people in Walnut Grove every week.
Yeah. Whatever social issue Michael Landon wanted to address that week.
Yeah.
Well, I think while we would say that the 80s was the heyday of the very special episode, and Kristen, you just said the king of the series that featured very special episodes would maybe be Different Strokes. I want to venture to say that those were probably the descendants of what I would say is truly the king of the very special episode, and that would be Norman Lear. I really think we have him to thank for the whole idea of bringing in these serious, dramatic, heavy topics and putting them into a sitcom environment and finding ways to discuss them in a lighthearted way, but not, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, you had to keep the comedy somehow.
You did. And that took really clever, creative writers.
Yeah.
That was one of the things I noticed the most as we were revisiting some of these episodes and the one I'm going to talk about today and the ones we talked about last week is how clever you had to be, and you tiptoed on a really fine line. I would say some of the ones we talked about last week as we went a little longer into the 80s, they might have gone over that line a little bit at times, and I think maybe that added to their demise. But it took a really special writer to be able to kind of, what's the word I want?
To strike a balance. Mm-hmm.
And I think no better place was that done than in the very special episode that I would like to share with you guys today. That was my favorite. And it was one I didn't even remember until I started to do some research for today's episode. And then I was Husker-dude at the wazoo. Because I went to what I would consider now maybe the ultimate source for very special episodes. And that is a double volume set of books titled Tonight on a Very Special Episode, When Sitcoms Get Serious, by Lee Gambin. The fact that this set contains two volumes lets you know that there is no stone unturned when it comes to very special episodes. So as I was going through one of these volumes, I came upon an episode of One Day at a Time called Barbara's Friend. Barbara's Friend was a two-parter on what I would probably say was one of the most important TV shows that I watched growing up. I wanted to be Barbara Cooper in One Day at a Time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I emulated her. Right? Her outfits, I wanted her hair. That was never going to happen. But that show, it was different to me really than any other show that I'd watched before. Valerie Bertinelli was probably my almost real girl crush. I know we talk about Christy McNichol. She was the best friend that I wanted to kind of play with and hang out with. Valerie Bertinelli was like aspirational to me. She was that kind of a girl crush. Mm-hmm. And I want to let our listeners know that obviously with the love I have for One Day at a Time, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners do, we will devote an episode in the future totally about One Day at a Time.
It's
because
coming.
There is so much to talk about. All right. So let me remind you about Barbara's Friend, okay? It might just take a few sentences, and then I think you guys are going to remember this. It was a two-parter. It was in the third season, so this has us in 1977. This episode begins with Barbara rushing into the family apartment, and she slams the door so hard. And it's kind of funny because the B storyline in this episode, the kind of funny comic relief, is Snyder has gone on a diet and none of his clothes fit him anymore. And Julie, Mackenzie Phillips, is having to tailor all of his clothes. So he's getting his pants kind of pinned when Barbara rushes in, slams the door, and oh my gosh, he gets stuck with the pin and he screams out loud. But Barbara says, shh, don't tell her I'm here. The her that she's referring to is a new student named Melanie who has moved into the neighborhood and has decided that Barbara is her best friend and basically is this clingy, odd, strange young girl who will not leave Barbara alone and is convinced that she and Barbara are best friends. So Barbara is doing whatever she can to avoid her right when the phone rings, okay? And Barbara threatens Julie and says, Julie, if that's Melanie and you tell her I'm here, I'm going to put Nair in your shampoo.
That's such a 70s joke.
It's such a 70s
Nair in your shampoo. Mm-hmm.
Turns out it was not Melanie on the phone. It's Cliff Randall. Okay, guys, just when I heard the name Cliff Randall, because we don't see Cliff Randall yet, we just hear his name, I I was Husker Dude out the wazoo.
I was too when you just said that.
Mm-hmm. If you recall, he was like Barbara's boy, the guy she always wanted. And sometimes he was her boyfriend and sometimes he wasn't. But she just pined for Cliff Randall. He happened to be the one on the phone. She takes the call and turns out Cliff is asking her on a date for that evening to a Grateful Dead concert. This is going to be important, you guys, okay? Okay. So she's all excited about that. When, guess who comes by and Mom opens the door? Melanie. Melanie is out the door.
Oh, no. No, Melanie.
Melanie comes in and the family, as well as viewers, are getting a front row seat to just how off Melanie is. Talk about clingy. She's just hanging all over Barbara. Even Ann Romano, who at one point said, Barbara, just give her a chance, now says, oh, Barbara, I'm sorry. I get it. Like, this is okay, scary.
This is so interesting because didn't you all have, I mean, yes. Everybody's mother did that. Everybody's mother was like, don't be cruel. You have to be nice.
She's so sweet.
And you're like, but Mom, you don't understand. She doesn't let me breathe. I mean, I remember literally at one point there was one girl who would physically be all over. She physically wouldn't, like, when I say cling, it was literal. And mm-hmm. I'm like, Mom, help me. And she's like, no, you just got to be nice. Get her off of me. This is such a relatable thing.
Right.
Well, and I can relate to being the mom in this situation with my own daughters at different times where I was like, come on. And then maybe that friend would come over to the birthday party or something. And I'd be like, oh, I get it.
What do we do?
Right. Yeah.
And it's a quandary as a parent and as, you know, as a human being, actually. I was always so angry that my mom didn't get it. But then in retrospect, then I would beat myself up for being cruel. Was I really being cruel? I don't know. It's a quandary.
It was that fine line, too, that now as adults we kind of understand as boundaries and things like that. But, of course, the three of us wanting to be rule followers and liked and not wanting to hurt people's feelings.
Yeah.
You know, you're the one who gives them an inch and they're going to take the mile. And that is exactly what Melanie did. So Melanie, in all of her hoopla, convinces Barbara that they need to go to the soda shop together because Melanie knows that her boyfriend is going to be there, and she wants Barbara to meet her boyfriend. Well, Barbara's kind of shocked, like, Melanie, you have a boyfriend? Well, how did I not know that? So next scene, we're at the soda shop where they're hanging out, and then Melanie all of a sudden says, Barbara, there's my boyfriend. And Barbara turns around, and who do we see strolling in?
Oh, no.
Cliff Randall.
Oh, no.
Yes, because Cliff had been nice to Melanie in a math class, which Melanie, in her odd ways, fast forwards and assumes
she took it too far.
Their boyfriend and girlfriend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, when Cliff sees Barbara in the booth, of course, they're going to the Grateful Dead concert that night, so he saunters over to kind of fill her in on, like, what they're doing. And Melanie interrupts with, like, oh, Cliff, hi. And Cliff's like, who are you?
Oh,
it's
no.
really kind of, it's funny.
This
but
is
sad.
Painful.
It is.
Painful.
We're right on that kind of cusp again of that kind of writing.
Yeah.
Because you're feeling the pain for Melanie, but you're also like, Melanie, you're such a dork. And of course, he doesn't remember you. And he is so funny. If you remember Cliff Randall, he's kind of like almost chachi-ish is kind of the way
chachi.
I give you. He has like his shirt's unbuttoned a few buttons down. He has a huge lapelled collar on. Anyway, and he's a little bit clueless. So he's just not understanding this whole Melanie drama and what's going on.
And for us kids at the time, this whole scenario probably was hilarious.
Oh,
and
yeah.
our moms watching it with us were probably like, oh, that poor girl.
I know I would have been very uncomfortable watching this, like this, just for the situation, not for everybody in the situation. I would have been like, I think I need to go into my room, read a book.
Well, I'll tell you the next scene I'm going to describe. This is what really put me back in time and Husker Dude'd me. So Cliff is sitting there chatting. Meanwhile, Melanie has presented Barbara with this glass giraffe. She said, this is a symbol of our friendship. I found this glass giraffe and it reminded me of you. And so we have this glass giraffe that's sitting on the table. Cliff's chatting a little more. And then he says to Barbara, okay, I'll pick you up at 7 o'clock tonight for the concert. Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Melanie's not dealing very well with this. Cliff gets up and walks away. Melanie starts yelling at Barbara, how dare you, my best friend, you stole my boyfriend. And she goes off on this tirade. Okay, meanwhile, Barbara's kind of had enough. This is the straw that's broken the camel's back. And she says to her,
I'm not your best friend.
I'll say you're not my best friend. You're my worst friend.
I am not your worst friend. I'm not your best friend. I'm not any kind of friend. If I was your friend, I'd be your only friend.
And with that, she accidentally knocks over the giraffe and it breaks on the floor.
This is the part I remember.
Yes.
Oh my God. I just got Husker Du'd so hard.
That's what happened to me. And we're all like, oh, and I'm sure it had gone to commercial in real time because the next scene, we are back in the apartment and the phone rings and Barbara is on the phone and we hear her saying, Melanie, is that you? And no, Melanie, no, you shouldn't. No, Melanie. And so, and Barbara's voice is getting a little bit more escalated. And then they do have a shot and we see Melanie is laying on this bed with a bottle of pills opened and the pills are spread around her on this bed. You sense this
urgency almost like this.
Yes, exactly. This fear that's happening. And you hear her calling Melanie's name over and over and telling her to stop and don't.
Oh my God.
And then Anne asks Barbara, what's wrong? And Barbara says, oh, Mom, help. Melanie is trying to kill herself. And that was the end of the first part of our two-parter. And I remember that scene because they stop it right with, you know, Melanie's trying to kill herself and she's holding the phone. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is not your everyday one day at a time. So we have to wait a week.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
To see
and
what
my
happens.
Sister's name is Melanie. So I know, feel like I just now all of this is coming back to me of like this bad feeling. Oh, I don't like the way I'm feeling right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would love to tell you and all of our listeners that they could go to YouTube or something and watch this episode. But as you remember last week, we talked about some of these very special episodes are very hard to find. And I actually had to purchase the entire DVD season 3.
I'm actually kind of jealous because I would watch that every night, like before bed.
So a week has passed. Thank goodness our second part is on. We come back right to the scene that we left. Barbara is still on the phone yelling for Melanie. And at this point, Schneider is now involved. He's back probably getting his pants tailored. And he and Mom are telling Barbara, keep her on the phone so we can trace the call.
I'm pretty sure this is the episode that taught me about tracing a call.
Would you please write a book? And it will go viral, like the All I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. Yours needs to be
from
All
TV.
I Ever Needed to Know I Learned from TV shows. Because you have so many things
all the
that
time.
You learned. A nightcap, making
divorce.
Whoopee.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's true.
Barbara is having to keep Melanie on the phone because Anne has told her, don't hang up on her. Just keep her talking. Keep talking to her. And then based on some crazy Schneider logic, he deducts that Melanie must be in a motel. So he heads out to find his, like, union buds because they're going to track down where this motel must be.
How, Schneider? How? Right, there's
now
no technology. What are they going
to
intuit?
They go to the motels that they know rent
by the hour because they're like Randy. They're all Randy, and they like to pick up special friends and go to the motel, the no-tell motel.
Are you serious? That's why?
No, this is it. And then he
hears
a
siren. Yes, that's why rent by the hour.
Yeah, he's explaining why, you know, a young girl wouldn't have a lot of money to pay for a nice hotel where she could, you know, she'd be staying overnight. And they'd probably ask questions why a teenager was checking in. So it's probably a seedy motel that rents by the 30 minutes or by the hour. Mm-hmm. And then they can hear a siren in the background.
I know, just the one.
And yeah, so they're able to narrow it down. Thank goodness, because Schneider and his longshoreman friends are able to get there and get an ambulance called.
Oh my God.
Schneider saves the day. So they get the ambulance. And next scene, we are in the hospital waiting room.
Oh my
God. Because Melanie has been whisked to the hospital. The doctor comes out and he informs Barbara and Anne that Melanie's going to be okay physically. It was dire, but they got her there in time. But mentally, she has to still heal. There's a lot more going on here. And so you're letting that sink in. And then Melanie's parents come into the waiting room and the mother starts yelling at Barbara saying, you're the reason that my daughter tried to kill herself. Oh, yeah. Anne was not going to have any of that. And then the doctor got involved and he said, listen, this is a cry for help, and tells the parents, you need to make sure she sees somebody and, you know, be with her on this journey. And the mother was like, she's done this before and she just wants attention. That's why we had to move from where we used to live because people couldn't know about it.
Oh, my God.
Yes. And the next part of the monologue that this doctor has is basically saying why mental health is important and you need to get help when somebody is asking for it.
Instead of moving.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It was just as much an episode about, you know, the suicide attempt as it was about removing the stigma of getting help when you need it and getting it for your children mm-hmm. when they're asking for it. Because at one point, Melanie had shared with Barbara, like, my parents don't understand me. No one understands me. No one likes me. And so she's dealt with this before. And mm-hmm. the way her parents dealt with it was they moved.
Wow.
And so the dad finally gets some balls and says to the wife, we are going to get her help and we're going to go alongside her and we're going to get help too. And he rises to the occasion. So the very end of the episode, Barbara is still feeling really awful about what happened. She's feeling really guilty, like she created this scenario. And Anne is trying to tell her, no, you didn't. And Barbara's like, yes, I did. It's all my fault. And she said, you know, I just want everyone to like me. I don't want anyone to ever be mad at me. Like some yeah. people, you know, aren't going to like you. And to bend over backwards and to do some things that you might not normally do just so people will like you might end up not always having the best outcome.
And we're still mm-hmm. learning those lessons today.
Well, exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know, as women yeah. in our 50s, how many of us are people pleasers? Raise your hand.
4 years of therapy of someone telling me over and over again, you are not responsible for how people react to the things you mm-hmm. say.
And that's kind of the end of the episode. I mean, there was some more meaningful wow. moments and there's comic relief mm-hmm. and everything. But it was this moment of saying, oh my gosh, even when you think you're trying to do the right thing, it might not be the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, it dawned on me that really One Day at a Time was probably the first and maybe only Norman Lear show that had people our age, or at least, you know, mm-hmm. younger characters be the main characters. I mean, it was mostly about, yeah. I mean, we did have Anne's storyline, and that was a big part of it. But also, we had teenagers who were main characters, and what they were facing was a big part of the storyline. Yeah. And in turn, you know, we could relate to a little bit more. So, so that was my very special episode for many reasons. I just got Husker-dude so yeah. many times watching it between Cliff Randall and the giraffe.
And Cliff, I remember thinking that Cliff was not a cute name. I just didn't think it was a cute name, and I didn't – sorry to all the Cliffs. So you have a perfectly good name. But I just remember for a heartthrob, for somebody who had a crush on, I'm like, no, shouldn't it be like Randy or something? I don't know. Cliff just seemed awkward and like a grandpa name or something.
Yeah. I was thinking up until then I probably didn't know any Cliffs that I can think of. And then the only Cliff I've known really since then would be Cliff on Cheers.
Well, Cliff on All My Children.
Oh, yeah.
Cliff
That's
and Nina.
That's a cute Cliff.
I love One Day at a Time. We'll come back to that someday, and we'll give it all the attention that it deserves.
This is it, this is it. This is life, the one you get. So go and have a ball.
Okay, next up, we have an episode from a show that actually tackled a lot of important subjects on a regular basis, but this one is The Very Specialist, because it really was trying to make a point for the kids. This storyline is not for the sake of the story. It's for the sake of empowering young women to not fall for their horny boyfriend's bullshit. So this is an episode I've been calling Leif Garrett Wants to Get in Buddy's Pants. Subtitle, Leif Garrett Has Needs. This is from a 1978 episode of the family drama Family, starring Christy McNichol as Buddy Lawrence, Leif Garrett as her boyfriend Zach, Meredith Baxter Burney as Buddy's much older sister, and an unknown actress named Lisa Welchel, a.k.a. Blair from The Future Facts of Life, as the new girl in school that Leif Garrett thinks might be an easier lay should Buddy choose not to put out. So this is a good example of a long-form PSA about not being pressured into sex by horny boys. So I had to do some reflection on this one because, as longtime listeners know, I am Team Sean Cassidy. In 1977 and 1978, you couldn't like both Leif Garrett and Sean Cassidy. You had to choose. And that was just a no-brainer for me. And I had real feelings about Leif Garrett, bad ones. Bad feelings. And they persisted while I went through this very special episode just a couple of weeks ago. And then we had a commenter on one of our posts recently featuring Leif Garrett. Apparently, this guy was good friends with Leif Garrett and thought he was just the nicest guy and thought maybe us dissing him in our post was unfair. And I had to sort of call myself on the carpet about that and ask, why, Kristen, do you have these nasty feelings about Leif Garrett? And now I'm wondering if I developed my feelings about him from watching this episode of Family, as if he wasn't playing a character. Like, And I think it's very possible. Like, it was the real Leif Garrett who was being a horn dogger with Christy McNichol.
You projected that scene and that character on him. Also, can I just ask
onto him?
We have never dissed Leif Garrett in a post, I wonder what he was.
It was probably a comment. I think it was probably
a comment.
A response mm-hmm. to a comment that someone had made.
Oh, okay. Because I was we're very respectful of Leif Garrett at the Pop Culture Preservation Society.
I probably jumped to conclusions based on my own feelings about him. Yeah, I would have just assumed that we were dissing Leif Garrett.
Well, yeah, that's right. We've talked about why in the past he wasn't one of our crushes. And we've said because he looked like he smelled like
dirty.
Old mop water, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That was our taste. We don't like dirty mop water. So we liked more clean cut guys.
And could I have seen him through the lens of this episode of Family? So just keep that in mind as we go through this episode. And my apologies in advance to Leif Garrett for my possibly misguided feelings about you. It might have been about Zach. It might have been Zach I was hating on. So the backdrop of this episode is Buddy's sweet 16 party. She's turning 16 and she's having a big party. Who should she invite? What caterer should we hire? I'm like, caterer? Zeta Thompson, what are you doing? Nobody is a caterer in the 70s. Where should we do our disco dancing at my party? Should we move the furniture and do it in the living room? So many questions about this party. And as if that's not stressful enough, Buddy's boyfriend, Zach, sees her looming 16th birthday as a pinch point in their relationship. The sexy kind. So when Lisa Welchel, aka Kathy, comes to town with brown hair, by the way, she's got brown hair, Zach is a little overly helpful to this new pretty girl. He sure seems to be spending a lot of time with Kathy, aka Lisa Welchel, and Buddy is pissed about it. And after a fight in the school library, which, okay, round of applause for a great use of a very realistic setting, by the way, Leif Garrett runs after Buddy and he insists, "You're the lady of my life, but Kathy is willing to give me something that you're not." It's just awkward silence on the show, just awkward silence. After a long enough time for the viewing audience to catch on to what Zach wants, Buddy says, "Oh, I see." She's peeved. Now, notably, they don't say the word sex a single time in this entire episode. Not even euphemisms for sex. Every time she refers to her predicament, there is a pregnant pause, excuse the pun, and maybe some raised eyebrows, and then the other person goes, "Oh, I see." Like they're just waiting for the viewer to catch up. So Zach follows that truth bomb with, "Well, how important am I to you, Buddy?" And then Buddy says, "Very." And he says, "Well, then I think it's time you proved it."
Oh, gross.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's so dicky.
So dicky. More silence. And Buddy can't believe what has just landed in her lap. So the rest of the episode is Buddy grappling with this decision. The whole episode becomes a will she or won't she exercise. And Leif Garrett keeps up the pressure campaign. He says, "My parents are going away for the weekend, and I think we should do something special for your birthday." Wink, wink.
Wink.
And she says, "Yeah, I know. I'm having a party, dummy." And he says the lamest line of the...
Hello, listeners. Today's episode is brought to you by Armoire, the clothing rental and return company that Carolyn and Michelle and I have been using for just a little over 6 months now. Armoire makes getting dressed easy and a lot more fun. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build a more exciting wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz, select items you like, and the clothes show up at your door in just 2 days. Then, when you're ready for something different, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. In the past, I've fallen victim to the fast fashion addiction. It truly is an addiction, grabbing that cute t-shirt off the rack as I walk by with my cart, because it's only $10. But we all know what happens. That $10 t-shirt goes in the giveaway pile 6 months later because it now looks like a dish rag. Armoire allows me to indulge in higher quality materials that look so much better, and they feel better too. Armoire also allows me to take some risks and maybe try out a style I wouldn't normally commit to, because I don't have to commit to it. I borrow it, try it out, see how I feel, and send it back. Right now, our listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/PCPS. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/PCPS to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again.
Hey, listeners, it's Carolyn, and I wanted to check in. It's 2025, you guys. How's everybody feeling? Well, I know for me, sometimes all of these hormonal changes that many of us are going through can be a real pain. And while there are natural hormonal changes that are going on through our bodies, did you know that there are also more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now? Yes, disruptors that can affect actually how our hormones function. They're in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. The good news is that we don't have to suffer through all of this anymore because now there's Hormone Harmony, and you've heard me talk about it. It's a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. You've heard me talk about how that menopause-induced brain fog has really messed with me at times, but I've really noticed a difference since I've taken Hormone Harmony, and even my sleep habits have gotten better. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is truly dedicated to making women's lives easier, and that means they only use science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and we are so excited to partner with Hormone Harmony. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PCPS for 15% off today.
The whole show.
I can understand you being afraid of being with a man, but I do have needs.
He says it like twice. He like doubles down on those needs.
So many needs. Leif Garrett has needs and he expects Buddy to take care of them. He even has the audacity to pretend to feel compassion for her. He understands if she's not ready, that's okay, but I'm ready and you can't expect me to wait. And, oh my God, it gets worse. And he suggests that if he has sex with Lisa Welchel, that could take the pressure off of Buddy. And this is where I'm like, is this why I hate Leif Garrett?
Yeah.
I think this might be
it. I will say, though, that back in 1977, like when my mom would talk to us about sex and saying no and being pressured, it was very much this story of like, if you really
pressure
like
campaign.
Him, the guy's the guy's going to say, well, if you really like me, you'll do it and all this kind of stuff. But you be so I feel like we're all being shocked now because it's something we taught our kids, and it doesn't matter if we're boys or girls, all about respect, right? And and respecting someone else and not put that type of pressure on someone. But this, all of this that you're talking about that we're being shocked at, I think was very, very real life.
Absolutely.
And probably still is in some places.
Yeah.
But now, thank goodness, we've all come a long way and our kids have come a long way and our kids know that they can be like, well, I don't care. Then go, you know, fulfill your needs yourself, Buster.
And think about it. Leif Garrett is not pulling this out of thin air. This is something that he's been taught by whom? By society, by friends. Who knows? Yeah. Who knows?
Right.
But it was clearly trotted out all the time.
That's a very real scenario for 1977.
It's very real. Yeah, it is.
But I will agree that the kind of torturing her with, well, if you don't want to, that's okay. I'll just do it with Kathy.
Yes. And
that's
it didn't
gross.
Even seem, it was really weird. It wasn't even like he was threatening her with it. It was almost like he was trying to like, you know, I'll just do it with her and you can still be my girlfriend.
Yeah, that was a little cringy.
It was super cringy. And he's leaving these breadcrumbs of toxic masculinity all over the episode. Like when Buddy's dad has the urge to buy a Corvette and Seda Thompson is like, get over yourself, old man. Leif says to Buddy, you know, if your dad likes that car, he should keep it. He has different needs from your mom. So this was something that men and boys were told, that they have special needs that have to be taken care of, and they need to be taken care of by us. And Buddy, so quick, so aware, so honest, says, you know, ever since that girl came to town, all you talk about are needs. So I think we can sort of officially say that the idea that men have needs has been put to bed. I believe we're post-needs. We're living in a post-needs society. I don't care how crazy it makes you. You're not going to die. Like, nothing's right. going to explode down there.
And mm-hmm. I'd like to think that there are a lot more women writers at the table now than there might yes. have been in mm-hmm. the 70s. I'd right. love to see the credits of who wrote this episode, because that's mm-hmm. really who gave Leif the lines. You know,
okay,
he didn't
that's
create his
interesting.
Own
lines. Yeah, that's a very interesting point. And there weren't many women in any writers' rooms right. in 1978. That was so it was likely mostly men. I need to add here that whenever Lisa Welchel is on the screen, all you see is a lovely girl acting like the new girl, trying to be nice to everybody so she doesn't get rejected. She absolutely does not act, like Zach says, a girl who would give him something that Buddy will not. I don't know where he got this information about Lisa Welchel. Maybe it's wishful thinking. Maybe she's just a useful cudgel to help him get what mm-hmm. he wants. But it's smart on the part of the writers, because the lazy thing to do would have been to bring in the new pretty girl and have her be all alluring and predatory and horning in on Buddy's territory. But she's not. She's just nice. So then we watch poor Buddy try to get help and guidance from her older sister and brother, only for them to be clueless, not know what she's talking about, again, because no one says sex, and then recoil when they actually realize what she's asking about, because she'll say things like, you know, what was it like your first time? And they're like, no, I'm not answering that question. That's private information. Poor Buddy. Nobody will help her. I take this to be a lesson for parents. They're saying, please be open-minded. Please don't freak out. Just answer their questions, because they're really struggling. Don't leave them hanging like that. Help them make the good decisions. Because if you recoil and say, that's private and I don't want to talk about it, they might do the thing that you don't want them to do. Mm-hmm. So the most dramatic moment of the show is when Buddy asks Meredith Baxter Burney, her older sister, for a ride to Zach's house the night his parents are out of town in Vegas. Buddy is resigned. She's going to do it. By this point, MBB, as I've been calling her, she knows that she messed up as an older sister. And the whole drive over there, you're like, MBB, say something, please. Buddy is so uncomfortable. It's like she's walking up to the guillotine and Meredith Baxter Burney is driving her there. They're just sitting there in silence. It's so painful. And Buddy is wearing her snazzy blazer plus bell bottoms outfit that you know she picked out for her first time. And you can't believe it when she gets out of the car in her first time outfit and she starts slowly walking up the front walk to Zach's house. And I'm screaming at Meredith Baxter Burney. I'm just dying with every step she takes. And MBB just watches out the window with this worried look on her face. And I'm like, say something, please. But then Buddy stops and she turns around. She starts walking back to the car because she has a tummy ache. And that's when MBB gets out to help her. Buddy says she feels sick and she's holding her little tummy. And Meredith Baxter Burney, thank God, she says, I think you're not ready to take this step. And this is so sad. It actually made me cry. Buddy says, but if I don't go in there, I'm going to lose this. Oh. And your heart just mm-hmm. breaks for her. And I have so much rage and hatred for Leif Garrett in this moment. It couldn't have been good for his career. Right? If it affected yeah. anybody else the way it affected me, it couldn't have been good for his career. And Buddy says, I just thought if I tried to become a woman really fast, I could just get it over with. But I just don't have those feelings yet. Am I weird? And MBB packs her up and gets her home toot sweet with her tummy ache. And apparently she never called Zach to say, I'm not coming. And he must have been sitting there all night with his wiener in his hands, because the next scene is at her party, her sweet 16 party. Yeah. And here comes Zach. And he says, we had a date, Buddy. And here's the come to Jesus moment. At the door, during her sweet 16 party, Buddy says, with confidence,
I don't know what you want, Zach. And I'm sure I want that too. Soon. But not yet. I'm just not ready to meet your needs until I've met my own. But if I were ready, it'd be with you.
And you're like, Wah, clapping, clapping, clapping. And then I don't agree with this part. She says, but if I were ready, it'd be with you. And I'm like, you don't have to. You can get somebody better. You can get somebody better.
Yeah.
And he smiles all goofy as if that's enough to make up for that throbbing he supposedly had in his pants all day. And then they disco dance. They start to dance. They're like dancing for real. Yeah.
It's very awkward.
It's totally choreographed. Totally choreographed. Like it's a part hustle, part bus stop, and it's to burn, baby, burn. Disco Inferno.
It's so great, though. The writers did such a great job of putting words into so many adolescent girls' mouths after they watched that episode.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Girls who didn't feel like they had someone to talk to, like MBB, right?
Right.
And then they can watch that episode and they can think, oh, I'm in the same situation. And that sounds good. That's what I'm going to say. So
that's what I'm going to say.
I love kind of how the writers stepped in as sort of parents. Like you call it our electronic
totally
babysitter
did.
A lot. And and it did a lot of good in a lot of situations.
Because not everybody has an adult sister that they can go to.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
not everybody's mom was like, you can ask me anything. Most parents
oh, no. Work. Mom's just going to go, say no, say no, say no.
Yeah, of course
no.
not. Of course you're going
to
say no.
But not give you language to be able to be honest.
Way to go, Christy McNichol. Really, I mean, so succinct. It makes me wonder if she stayed up all night, like, writing it out in her little Mead notebook so she would get it just right.
The very special episode that was very special to me is a Family Ties episode called A, My Name is Alex. And this is considered the greatest episode of the entire 176 episodes of Family Ties. A, My Name is Alex is a 1 hour, very special episode that aired on March 12th, 1987. Now, I was a senior in high school at the time, and to be honest, I probably hadn't watched Family Ties as regularly as I had from when it began in 1982, and then like 1982 to 1985, I watched it every single week, I'm sure. But I don't think I was really watching it that year, probably because high school, right? But I have very definite memories of this episode. So to refresh your memory, if it's been a while since you've seen it or maybe you missed it, Alex's childhood friend is killed in a car accident. Alex has survivor's guilt because he refused to ride with the friend. Alex seeks therapy to deal with that, plus a lot of other issues in his life. Can you say control freak? Anyone, right?
Yep.
But it's not just the very special subject matter that makes this episode so great. It's the writing, the acting, and the very unique and unusual staging of a sitcom that all combine to make this episode so special. This episode came to Gary David Goldberg, the creator of Family Ties, who, you guys, we could do a whole episode on him.
Right.
He was a writer on Bob Newhart, Phyllis, MASH, Lou Grant, as well as creating and producing many other shows. Ubu Productions, named after his black lab, Ubu. Remember? Sit, Ubu, sit.
Sit, Ubu, sit.
Good dog. Woof. Remember? And at the end of every show that he produced, everybody in the room would go, sit, Ubu, sit.
Mm-hmm.
Good dog. Woof. Anyway, sadly, he died in 2013 of a brain tumor.
Ew.
But anyway, the idea for this episode came to him in a dream in the fifth season of Family Ties, right after he lost his parents, beloved parents, 2 weeks apart.
Oh, wow.
Which devastated him. He was grappling with his grief and he knew he had to write about it. He had to like exercise it, he said. I watched a really great long interview with him where I got a lot of this information, and I'll put a link to it in this week's Weekly Reader if you were a fan of this episode or him or Family Ties, whatever. But he's like, how would I write about this when I write for comedy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're writers. We know a lot of times to get to exercise something and to make more sense of it, we write about it. But he's like, this isn't going to really fit, you know? And he basically dreamt the entire storyline of A, My Name is Alex one night, for real. Like, he jumped out of bed and started writing.
Wow.
But after he and his team wrote the script, they knew it was not only 1 hour, but the way that he dreamt the second half, which I'll talk about in a minute, which was like a staging of a play, they knew that that second half had to be shown without commercials. One, because there was no way they could cut any more pages and make the story and make this story as impactful. And two, it needed to be one long scene to keep the integrity of the structure and the impact of the staging and content. But, you know, like, that's going to happen, right? I mean, these shows rely on advertising.
Yeah.
So anyway, after some finagling, Goldberg got Brandon Tartikoff on board. He was like the head of NBC, who moved things around in the schedule. And the one-hour episode aired on March 12th at 9 p.m. And the second half went straight through. No commercials at all.
This was a dorm room watch. All the people in my dorm room watching this.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. A quick reminder of some key moments in this episode. The first half sets everything up, and it is filmed exactly like other Family Ties episode. It's Alex, Mallory, Stephen, and Elise returning from his friend Greg's funeral. And Alex, of course, is bopping around the kitchen almost manically, deflecting the situation with rapid-fire jokes, as he does. He's saying,
I'm a lucky guy, real lucky. I was supposed to be in that car with Greg, but I wasn't. He said, Alex, come with me. Have to help my brother move a piano. Short drive, 15 minutes out of your life. What do I say? No way, Greg. I'm busy now. And why? Because I didn't want to be bothered. Because I'm selfish. Do you believe that selfishness saved my life? I knew it'd come in handy.
Then Alex starts manifesting Greg everywhere. He keeps showing up, and Alex is reliving telling him that he wouldn't ride with him. And then in the next beat, begging him not to go, and then apologizing for not going. And you can just see, this is always when he's alone, by the way. When his family's around, he's just cracking jokes. He finally breaks and he sobs, why am I alive, over and over as Elise holds him.
I want answers. Okay, because I can't go on like this. Why am I alive? Why am I alive? Why am I alive? Why am I alive?
We're going to help you, honey.
I don't... That's
right. Alex, we're going to help.
And then the second act, if you will, since it's staged like Our Town, which was very intentional of Gary David Goldberg, as that's how he dreamt it. It takes place in what appears to be a black box theater. It's minimal stage dressing. It's spotlit scenes. Alex is mostly alone, reluctantly and angrily answering the questions from an off-camera therapist whose voice is all we hear. And let's not forget, there's no commercial. But just like in Our Town, Alex goes in and out of various scenes and vignettes of his childhood. At one point, he's talking to Elise and as a kindergartner. So it's grown up Michael J. Fox, Alex P. Keaton, but the language and the words coming out of his mouth are like, mommy, he's acting like he's a kindergartner. So funny. He's begging her to stay home from school so he can watch the Nixon hearings.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, you forget he was us.
Yeah, and then there is 7-year-old Alex feeling pressured when we see his teacher telling the class, oh, Alex knows the answer. And this one broke my heart because Alex, channeling his 7-year-old self, shouts at her, stop, this makes me uncomfortable. Kids are jealous and don't want to play with me. And then he just screams, I'm just a little boy. You don't put that kind of pressure on a little boy.
Oh my God, I just got chills.
Guys, like it just starts to make sense.
This is so ambitious.
So, yeah. Wow. And then don't forget, we're now getting into Alex's mental health all because the survivor's guilt he was feeling.
Right, right.
And then that just leads one thing to another.
And it shows us who he is.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. And why. Mm-hmm. And the therapist continues digging deeper into his childhood and his relationships with Mallory and Jennifer. We have little vignettes with them. And then Gary David Goldberg took a really big risk. He says he struggled with two themes after his own parents passed away, fatherhood and God. And this was the time when Hollywood and the moral majority were at constant odds about values on television. But Gary David Goldberg just went for it. And the therapist asks, do you believe in God, Alex? And Alex says, that's what this all comes down to, isn't it? That's what I'm trying to figure out here. And so he comes to realize that he does believe in God and then very quickly realizes that Greg's death needs to be about more. And then he has this lovely monologue about Greg being dead, but him still being alive, and that he can take Greg's energy and sense of humor and warmth and make it his own. And he can keep Greg's memory alive that way. Mm-hmm. And then the episode just ends with Alex sitting down in the chair, looking straight at the camera, and he tells the therapist he's ready to talk. I guess the audience sat in silence for a beat before just erupting and giving him a standing ovation. And Gary wow. David Goldberg said it was the greatest night of theater I had ever seen.
Wow.
So, it yeah. So he did so turn it wrong. Into theater.
Mm-hmm. It could have gone so very wrong. It could have
it
just
could
been
have.
Ridiculously
that campy almost. Yeah.
And right. stilted mm-hmm. and awkward or campy. Yeah, all of that. Mm-hmm. And yet he hit it out of the park. Right. And maybe it's because it came from a dream.
And he did hit it out of the park. Of the 90 million households with TVs, 36 million tuned into that episode. And the impact of it is hugely important. Let's not forget, in the late 80s, the nation was going through a mental health crisis, really, at that time. And the idea of someone like Alex P. Keaton, so confident, so smart alecky, so I have the answer to everything. Mm-hmm. The idea of someone like that seeking therapy, it made a huge impact on people. It destigmatizing getting help through therapy. Later, teachers and doctors actually wrote into Paramount requesting tapes of that episode to show their students. And Michael J. Fox credits this episode for him seeking help after his Parkinson's diagnosis. In his 2003 memoir, Lucky Me, he says this. That episode won me an Emmy, but now, immersed in this daunting real version of my alter ego's anguish and reaching out just as he had for professional help, the only reward I sought was relief. In many ways, I could relate to Alex's confusion. Like him, I never thought I'd have anything to do with psychologists or psychotherapy. I was always a figure-it-out-myself kind of person, and it was painfully clear to me that this time I didn't have a clue about where to start.
Wow.
So like that episode, he had no idea at the time that that was going to go on to influence him. And then the episode went on to win Outstanding Writing and a comedy series for that episode at the 39th Annual Emmys. Michael J. Fox won the award for Outstanding Lead Actor in a comedy series for that episode. And in 1997, TV Guide named this episode on their list of 100 greatest episodes of television.
And it's because he dug in and he took a risk.
I think that had so much to do with it. It's really, I think, just the creative and unique way that Gary David Goldberg chose to present this. Because let's think about it. Someone dying survivor's guilt. That's not, you know, Edith opening the door and a man trying to rape her. That's not Dudley and Arnold, you know, at age 7, 8 years old, you know, getting drugged so a man can sexually abuse him. It's way more of a common type of, you know, tragedy people go through. But
and yet quite insidious.
Took it, but he took it and he brought in so many other aspects of this, like with the mental health and the therapy and everything. So.
Yeah, and it was very organic. It's not like before the season started and before his parents had passed away that they said, we're going to have an episode this season about survivor's guilt or grief, which I think a lot of these other very special episodes would have been planned ahead and you had the topic before you even had a story. And this was so organic.
What would we do, baby?
Seriously, where would we be without TV?
I know.
It's like, it really is a force for good in many instances. All this time, all the experts were telling us it would rot our brains, but really it was a vehicle for life lessons that no one wanted to talk about. All of these things that nobody wanted to talk about, but we desperately needed information about. So thanks to Leif Garrett and Christy McNichol, I was never going to take responsibility for anybody's blue balls. That was not my problem to solve.
Kristen, you would have never taken responsibility for anyone's blue balls, Leif Garrett or not.
Nope.
I just, you know, like, not my problem.
Not my problem, dude.
That's right.
And thanks to Valerie Bertinelli and Alex P. Keaton, someone was saying the quiet part out loud and feeding our curiosity in a way our grown-ups wouldn't or couldn't. And I don't mind if they were silly or overacted or poorly handled. At least someone was saying something. And that's better than pretending that something doesn't exist. So again, I ask of modern day TV, what have you done for me lately?
Right?
You are so right. I mean, honestly, I think it could heal a lot of stuff right now. It could cure a lot of things for us all to gather around, you know, quality TV
for everybody.
For everybody
that we would watch together, not alone in our rooms. I think it's time TV ponied up and started saving the world again. Thank you for listening today, and we'll see you next time.
And a huge thank you to all of our incredible patrons. Your support means the world to us and directly fills up the tanks we need to keep on trucking. Because of your generosity, we're able to keep bringing you new episodes, invest in equipment and the subscriptions we need to produce the podcast, and keep bringing you quality content. Today, we're giving a special thank you to patrons Melanie. Melanie, I hope it's not the Melanie from
Are you okay?
I hope it is. Melanie!
Are you okay? Maybe she got help after watching that episode of Family Ties.
Allie, Sharon, Felicia, Carmi, Alexis, Sheila, Stephen, Christina, Rosarita, Cheryl, Julie, Susie, Darby, and Maria. And if you enjoy the show and want to help us grow, consider becoming a patron yourself. You can find out more about the different tiers of support and the exclusive perks each offer by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com. That's patreon.com. And then just type Pop Culture Preservation Society up in the search box. And every contribution, big or small, makes a huge difference. And we deeply appreciate your support.
Thank you.
If you'd like to help put a smile on our face as well as fill up our tanks, you can always leave a review, 5 stars, please, on any of the podcast platforms that you listen on, and write a nice review because we love reading them and sharing them with each other. It does really, truly put a smile on our face.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast courtesy of the cast of Three's Company. To good times.
To happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie. Cheers.
Cheers.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu, nanu, keep on truckin', and may the force be with you. Spread